what is there to prevent aliens who are in the U.S., whether they're here legally or illegally, from registering and voting? Well, in most states, there's absolutely nothing to prevent them from doing that. They were doing everything they could to go out and persuade people to vote. Like I said, it was a get out the vote campaign. Normally, that's what campaigns are supposed to do, not election officials. Their job is to process voter registrations, get people registered, and then run the polls, not go out and solicit and get people to vote in those areas.
Zuckerberg is giving these grants that are largely going to Democratic strongholds like Philadelphia, and then they are hiring additional people.
It most definitely increased turnout and made the difference, really, in the 2020 election.
All right, folks, welcome to the Sean Spicer Show. You know what? You won't need these for a few more decades, so file them away and be ready. Hopefully this is like 50 years that Joe Biden won't stay in government anymore. Like, he's actually the only one who's probably seen a solar eclipse. Anyway, I'm kidding. Big weekend. Trump raised $50.5 million at one fundraiser over the weekend in Palm Beach. Of course, the Biden campaign went nuts. I want to show you how Joe Biden reacted. Take a look.
Folks, you know, Trump is down in Florida today raising money from a bunch of hedge fund billionaires who want him to cut Social Security and Medicare and their taxes. So I figure there's no better day than today to tell you that in the first quarter of this year, we raised $185 million. Our campaign now has 1.6 million individual donors, and more than 500,000 of those donors are brand new since 2020. This campaign is Scranton versus Palm Beach.
All right, so let's just be clear on this. That's Joe Biden, who just bragged about a $26 million Radio City Music Hall where they raised $900,000 a pop with a bunch of left-wing Hollywood activists. And now they're complaining because what? Oh, I get it, because Trump doubled your take and broke all-time records. Prior to that, they were all happy bragging. They were all over on every media channel talking about how amazing this was and what a record it was. When Trump smoked them, suddenly it's, you know, oh, it's a bad thing. Anyway, a lot to get to on that as well. This week, the House is back. And by the way, I got to play this for you. Congratulations to the South Carolina women's team. They had a big win over the weekend. If you filled out your bracket, then you might find this amazing. Apparently, our vice president in chief had a bracket salad. She didn't realize. Well, I'll play it for you. Take a look.
Do you know that women were not, the women's teams were not allowed to have brackets until 2022? Think about that. And what that talk about progress, you know, better late than never, but progress. But you know what, just how we love March Madness, and even just now allowing the women to have brackets and what that does to encourage people to talk more about the women's teams.
Congratulations, Kamala Salad, maybe that's her new name. Anyway, that just shows you. Apparently, that should be misinformation. The House is back this week. A lot going on in Mike Johnson's world, the new Speaker of the House. He's got to deal with Pfizer reauthorization, Ukraine funding. Biden's trying to wipe out tons and tons of student loans. I mean, there's a lot going on. Trump announced, by the way, his new position on abortion this morning. I give him a lot of credit, guys. You may not agree with me on this, but he said it's a state's issue, and he's not going to get into whether it should be a federal ban. We've talked about this over and over again. A federal ban's not going to happen. There's not 60 votes in the Senate. We fought for 50 years to send it back to the states. This is the right position. Smart move on him and on the campaign. Before we keep this conversation going, just a quick reminder. If you haven't done yet, please, and thank you to everyone who has, please hit that subscribe button no matter where you're watching. YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, Apple. Hit the button. Hit the notification button. It helps us on all the platforms. You guys have been great spreading the word. If you're watching on the first on channel 347 or wherever else, Samsung, Vizio, make sure you hit that notification button or hit the subscription button there as well. So important. We've got two great sponsors to get to that I want to tell you about. But then when we get done with that, I want to bring in Hans von Sinskowski. He is the head of election reform at the Heritage Foundation. Hans is the leading expert in the country on this issue. And we're going to break down everything you need to know about how to make sure your vote is secure and what efforts are being made around the country to keep this a secure election. In these times of economic uncertainty, are you looking for a way to diversify? I know I was. And so I called my friends at Bishop Gold. 844-984-1616 or go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean and have a conversation with them about how to secure your financial future using Precious Metals. Now, I did that. Now, so you may be at home right now and say, I've got an old 401k, an IRA, or I'm just looking to expand my portfolio. I picked up the phone, I called them, and I explained to them my financial situation, what I was looking into, and they created a mix that would work for me. You should do the same. These are the people that I trust with my money. I invested my money with Bishop Gold Group because they're full of integrity and transparency. They can tell you exactly how the system works, how you can hold it, how they can hold it, how you liquidate it in times of need. So if you've got that old 401k, you've got that old IRA, or you're sitting back right now concerned about the future and thinking, I need to diversify, call Bishop Gold Group, 844-984-1616, or go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean to begin your financial journey with Precious Metals. And by the way, you get a free gift because you're coming through me. Let me ask you a question. When the power goes out, are you going to be ready? And I'm talking for maybe hours, days, weeks, even months. Are you going to be ready? Check this out. That's me in my kitchen with my Patriot Power Generator 2000X. You see all the stuff that's plugged in there? If I wanted to, I could show you it will actually power my refrigerator. That's how powerful this thing is. Now, here's the thing. It's inside, right? No fumes, no noise. You can bring it into your house. You can travel with it. So if you need a friend or a family needs help, you can be the guy that comes to the rescue. It literally powers off solar panel generators that come with it. No gas required. You don't need to keep going and filling it up, keeping it outside, running through messy cords in and out of your doors. No way. The Patriot Power Generator 2000X takes care of all your needs. And again, it comes with these solar power generators that come free with the purchase. So go to 4patriots.com/Spicer, 4patriots.com/Spicer, so that you will be prepared in an emergency. And then again, it's not just you. It's about you, your family, your friends powering that refrigerator, computer, tablet, other things that are critical to you. Go to 4patriots.com/Spicer. Hans, good to see you. So appropriate to have you here. I mean, you are the man, the expert in all things election integrity, voter fraud. So let me just ask you the biggest question that I get asked all the time. What do we need to worry about, and do we need to worry about our votes this election cycle, 2024?
Well, look, things, Sean, are better than they were in 2020. I mean, just give you one quick example. Remember, Zuckbucks in 2020 had huge amounts of money flowing into urban cities, places like Philadelphia, all to basically use election officials to get out the vote for the Democratic campaign. That kind of funding has now been banned in 28 states, including in Wisconsin. Wisconsin just banned Zuckbucks. So that's an improvement. On the other hand, look, a lot of states have legalized drop boxes where you really have no control over people turning in absentee ballots. So we still have concerns about that. And we still have concerns about making sure that voter registration rolls are actually accurate and clean. And look, you know, you've talked about a lot. We have this huge border security problem.
I want to get to that. I mean, that's
and you know, what is there to prevent aliens who are in the U.S., whether they're here legally or illegally, from registering and voting? Well, in most states, there's absolutely nothing to prevent them from doing that.
All right, there's a lot to break down and unpack from that first answer. So let's kind of take it, I think, one by one. You mentioned the Zuckbucks. So let's start with that. I care about 7 or 8 states: Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Arizona, Wisconsin, Nevada, New Hampshire, North Carolina. You mentioned Wisconsin. Of the remaining states, are any of the ones that I mentioned still taking those Mark Zuckerberg Zuckbucks?
Well, I don't have all 28 states in my memory banks, but I know Georgia, for example, and boy, you know what a fight there was over Georgia. Georgia did ban Zuckbucks, and actually, once they passed that law, DeKalb County, which is a big Democratic stronghold, actually figured out a loophole to try to get around it, and the legislature came back and amended the law to even plug that loophole. Okay. So Georgia has been taken care of. Like I said, Wisconsin has too. Pennsylvania, that was the one bill that apparently the Republican legislature was able to get past the Democratic governor without him vetoing it. They also banned Zuckbuck. So there won't be huge amounts going to Philly.
Good. Well, that's at least three of them. Let me just, for people who are watching and saying it's 4 years ago, I've got PTSD, remind everyone what Zuckbucks were and are.
Well, the left came up with this idea of taking charitable money, basically, $450 million that Mark Zuckerberg and two other big liberal donors gave to this small nonprofit organization. And they then gave it in grants to election offices all over the country. But almost all the money only went to Democratic strongholds, big cities. And the whole idea was to take the get out the vote campaign that Democratic campaigns or the Democratic Party have to, you know, wage before Election Day, to move it into government offices. And you could see the effects. Turnout of Democratic voters went up very much in the areas that got this money. And states realized, you know, this is not a good idea to let private donors give money to election officials.
So is there anything inherent? Did they find a loophole, or was this illegal from the jump?
It was, there were no laws against it.
So Zuckerberg is giving these grants that are largely going to Democratic strongholds like Philadelphia, and then they are hiring additional people. And what are those people doing?
Well, they were doing everything they could to go out and persuade people to vote. Like I said, it was a get out the vote campaign. That kind of action, like I said, normally that's what campaigns are supposed to do, not election officials. Their job is to process voter registrations, get people registered, and then run the polls, not go out and solicit and get people to vote in those areas. That's what campaigns are supposed to do. And like I said, it most definitely increased turnout and made the difference really in the 2020 election.
Yeah, and I think just to underscore this point, right? So if you know, now you can't turn out vote by party, right? But what you can do, and this is the point that I think you're making, is if you are in an urban city where you know it's 85 to 15 Democrat, then and you spend all of your time and money there, well, technically you're not pushing people by party, but you know the odds are in your favor, right? I mean, and that's what they've done. By making sure that those monies went to Democratic strongholds, they could legitimately say this is a nonpartisan effort, but we know that we're pushing, you know, 10-1 Democrats to go out over Republicans.
Right. Look, it's the same thing. A lot of these nonprofits say, we go into historically underserved communities. That's their code words for going into areas where Democratic voters predominate so they can get those Democratic voters to the polls. And look, they're in essence getting around, you know, federal tax rules that say that they're not supposed to be engaging as nonprofits in that kind of partisan behavior.
Okay, so you brought up then drop boxes. These were brought in under the guise of COVID. It was unsafe to go into a voting, to go into a gym or wherever, a church, to vote, which, by the way, even Dr. Fauci didn't agree with. Right. Why are they allowed to still use an unsecured drop box in several of these states?
Well, because, you know, Democrats control many of the legislatures in some states. It's become supposedly an accepted form of voting. And so basically the COVID crisis supposedly legitimized the establishment of drop boxes. And, you know, when Georgia tried to actually regulate it, they passed a law saying, okay, we are going to have drop boxes, but they have to be inside a government office, and you can only use them when the government office is open. You know, they were sued. All these liberal organizations sued them and said they were discriminating. And so there's been all this litigation to actually to prevent states from getting rid of drop boxes.
Yeah, it's interesting. If the office is open and you can drop it off to an individual, why do you need to put it into a box? Let me play devil's advocate with you for 1 second, because you are much more equipped to answer this than I am. But when I argue many of the same facts that you do, but without the same depth that you can go into, a liberal friend will say to me, isn't it odd that everything that we're chewing on our side is to encourage more people to participate in the process, get more people to vote? Your side is trying to prevent people from voting. How do you answer that question?
That is just simply not true. What we're trying to do is make sure that people are voting in a secure way so that their votes won't get stolen. And that is an issue that is important, no matter, frankly, which side of the political aisle you're on and whether you're in a poor neighborhood or a rich neighborhood. In fact, in poor neighborhoods, it's much more likely that a Dropbox is going to get broken into and stolen, particularly if you work in an area or live in an area where they've had the defund the police movement and there's less security.
Have any of these boxes been stolen or tampered with?
Mailboxes have been stolen and tampered with. And in fact, you may recall that an election was just recently overturned in Connecticut because there was actually video of people coming and putting huge amounts of absentee ballots into drop boxes in a state where you're not allowed to do that. And that tells you how, with an unmonitored drop box, people can try to take advantage of that to engage in absentee ballot fraud.
So let's keep going down this then. You talked about absentee ballot. Several of these states, particularly the ones that I've mentioned, mailed out a ballot or a form to vote, an absentee ballot request to every single person in 2020 under the guise of COVID. Are they still doing it?
Well, it depends on the state. Nevada is doing that, but other states are not doing that. Georgia being one of the example of the states where they decided to do that, to send out an absentee ballot request form to every voter in the state. They're definitely not doing that this year. In Nevada, they actually do send ballots out to every registered voter. And Nevada has one of the most inaccurate, worst voter lists in the country. It's filled with the names of individuals who have moved, who've died, who are ineligible to vote. And unfortunately, they're not doing a lot to clean up that problem.
So you kind of just answered my next question, which is, again, let me play devil's advocate and do the goody two shoes to someone who advocates greater participation in elections. And I say, what's the harm in sending an application out to every single voter? Your response is?
Well, my response is that we shouldn't be encouraging absentee balloting because it's so insecure.
Just stop for a second. Yep. I hear the media. I listen. I peruse once in a while, just for the good of the audience, not because I enjoy the likes of CNN or the Washington Post, and they will tell me that there is no evidence of this of what you speak of. You know, there's no way that this is tampered with. No one's. You know, this is a GOP talking point.
Well, they can try making that point, but all you have to do is go to the election fraud database that the Heritage Foundation maintains of proven cases of fraud from across the country, where we just passed the 1,500 mark, Sean. 1,500 proven cases of fraud from across the country. And like I said, does it always overturn an election? No. I mean, sometimes it's just people stealing individual votes. But other times, it leads to things like the election I just talked about in Connecticut that was overturned by a judge.
But you know, the funny thing is, I love this argument. So there's two things that I say to folks all the time, and you tell me whether or not you think that these are good points to make. Number one, I'm home during the day a lot. I'll collect the mail from my house. Now it's my family, but I get to sort through it before anybody else does. I get to, you know, there's things that I see. Sometimes they'll flag them for my wife. Hey, I saw this, so I opened it for you, whatever. that's a potential area of fraud, number one, when it comes to, because let's say that I was in an apartment building. I was down visiting some friends not too long ago, and they've got a central repository for a lot of mail and gifts that a bunch of people sort through. I mean, that's number one. Number two, the broader argument that I make is when you go to a bank, they don't say, well, we don't have a safe or we don't lock the door because we've never been broken into. You right. protect that which you value, i.e. you have a safe deposit box, the bank puts your money into a vault, you lock the door at night. When you lock the door at night, you don't lock the door necessarily because you've been broken into four times. You lock the door to prevent getting broken into and because you value the safety of yourself and your family and your possessions. And yet, when we talk about voting, the left always mocks us if that's the approach.
Well, yeah, that's true. But all you have to do is go back to 2008 U.S. Supreme Court when it upheld Indiana's voter ID requirement, a new law the state had passed. And the court upheld it and said, look, the U.S. has a long history of election fraud. It's been documented by journalists and historians. Well, not the newer journalists, journalists and historians. And it can make the difference in a close election. Yeah. And that's the key to this. We have close elections all the time in this country, particularly at the local and state level.
Yeah, but here's the thing. This is what I find hysterical. What was 2000 presidential election, Florida, 537 votes, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
So the answer is unless you know when that's going to happen, it's kind of like unless you know when you're going to get broken into, you protect yourself. You don't have the foresight, a knowledge of knowing when that's going to happen. So it's not just the local level. We've seen it at the presidential level. And we just don't know what state that's going to be in or for how long. And that's where I think the left's argument falls flat.
No, it's true. And plus, look, I knew the lawyer at the Justice Department who for 30 years prosecuted election crimes. And what he said to me once was a lot of people out there, particularly journalists, don't understand, particularly in some of the more rural areas of the country and also in urban areas, who controls local government controls jobs, money, all kinds of things. And that's why there are people out there who are willing to put in the time and effort to cheat to win elections because it represents power once they get into office.
The thing that I find funny, though, it's not, actually, I shouldn't say that. I don't find it funny, but you get what I'm saying here. I feel like the excuse of the left is, well, if you can't show it to us, then it doesn't exist. And to some extent, I get that. But at the same time, to your point, if you control all the levers, then you're never, it's hard to find it. If that makes sense, like their argument is, well, okay, the Heritage Foundation has this 1500, but you know, God, it's onesies and twosies here and there.
Well, like I said, they just have the wrong attitude. It's going back to your banking example. Do we have massive bank theft in this country? No. But we have it happen often enough that we should take the basic security steps to try to prevent it from happening. Well, elections are exactly the same way.
Exactly. So let me ask you, about some of these other things that happened. Ballot harvesting. Where does ballot harvesting stand? Maybe first just explain to folks who don't necessarily and maybe have heard the term, what is ballot harvesting and how prevalent is it?
Well, in about half of the states, when you vote with an absentee ballot, you, the voter, can return the ballot. Members of your family can return it for you or designated caregiver, and that's it. But in the other half of the country, places like California, any stranger can show up at your door and say, oh, that absentee ballot you just filled out, I'll deliver it for you. Well, that invites all kinds of fraud. It invites coercion and pressure on voters in their homes where it can't be monitored. And like I said, we're in a situation where a little more than half the country bans that. Unfortunately, other states allow it. There has been a movement in states that allow anybody to pick it up to stop that. And a number of states have passed laws restricting it just to the voter and his family. But that's still a problem, like I said, in places like California.
So, for example, let's just say I'm a member of a union, and the union boss comes down and says, we're all going to request absentee ballots and then fill them out next Tuesday, and then I'm going to make sure that I drop them off. You ever hear about that kind of stuff happening?
Yeah, well, what we've seen is instances where the strangers that are going up to people's doors to collect ballots are working for campaigns, and they are opening the ballots to see who you voted for and changing votes. And for anybody who thinks that doesn't happen, just look at 2018 national congressional elections, 9th congressional district in North Carolina. The congressional race was overturned because of exactly that kind of malicious behavior.
All right, animal lovers, you've heard me say this before, but you got to go to deltarescue.org to check out the great work that my friend Leo Grillo has been doing at Delta Rescue. Leo has made it a lifelong mission to make Delta Rescue a no-kill sanctuary for life. What does that mean? It means this isn't a shelter. They're not there for temporary. They can go there and live forever to get the veterinary care, the support, the nutritional needs for life because of the work that Leo Grillo has done. It all started when he rescued one Doberman and now has turned it into a lifelong mission. But here's the thing, Delta Rescue. And as I said, if you go to deltarescue.org, check out the videos, unbelievably compelling if you're an animal lover, and you can see the great work that they do. But it all relies on help from people like me and you. Every contribution is important. It helps $5, $10, $15, $100, $1,000, a recurring donation. It all allows the work that Leo Grillo has done at Delta Rescue to continue. Horses, dogs, cats, you name it. But if you go on there, do me one more favor. Check out the estate planning gift and see if you're an animal lover, if you can make Delta Rescue part of your estate to make this a lifelong enduring mission. Help Leo do what he's done so greatly for decades to come. Thank you. I've always thought that, and this is the particular case in 2020, the media will have you believe that Trump lost all these cases. They say he filed 60-something cases and he lost them all. Is that a fair assessment of actually how this thing played out in 2020?
Well, no, because almost all those cases didn't actually get to the substantive claims that were made in the cases. They were all dismissed on procedural grounds.
You know, these judges. That's what people, I don't have the knowledge that you do, but I've always said, this is the thing. Go look, they'll say they didn't have standing. It was too late. It wasn't about the substance of the case.
Right. And they actually, those judges, they clearly wanted to get rid of what was a hot political potato that had landed in their laps. They really did a disservice to the American people if they had allowed those cases to go forward so that you get to the substantive stage, you get to a hearing where you can examine the evidence, question the witnesses, and decide whether or not the claims are credible, well, then people wouldn't have all these questions still about what happened 4 years ago.
So to the person that says, like I had Michael Whatley on the show, the new chairman of the RNC. I've had some campaign people. There's an effort by the RNC, Bank Your Vote. I know Governor Glenn Youngkin in Virginia had a similar effort in the last cycle in Virginia. What do you advise people to say, Hans, you are the leading expert in the country, probably the world, when it comes to election integrity, voter security. What is your advice about how to actually cast a ballot?
Well, I would vote in person. Do not trust the mails. Look, if you won the lottery, would you mail your lottery ticket to the lottery agency? No, nobody would.
Okay, so in Alexandria, I live in Alexandria, Virginia. Right. We have early voting. I can go down, it's like 3 years before the election. I'm kidding, but I mean, it's insanely early. And I can go down to City Hall and to actually a couple different places and cast my ballot as if I would on election day with the scanner. They tally it up. I get the cute little sticker saying I voted. Is that okay?
That's okay. You know, voting early is okay in the general election. I don't think it's going to make a difference whether you vote early or you vote on election day.
But see, I would argue, I disagree with that. I make an argument, and I've had several folks on the thing. I've been on the campaign. You know, you chase people who haven't voted. I have to text you. I have to call you. I have to send you a note. I spend money going after people who haven't voted if I know that they are a regular voter. I would argue that you actually do cost the campaign resources if you are a regular voter. Bank that vote early, do it in person if you want. But I think that it saves time and effort at the end. And who knows? My goodness, your kids could have an emergency. You could have an emergency. There could be a snowstorm, as there was in Nevada. Right. I mean, right. I just don't you agree that at least going and casting that vote early is smart logistically?
Oh, no. Look, I agree with you on that. I think you should vote as soon as you can to make sure that ballot is there, that there aren't any last minute tie-ups. The one thing I would tell you about that is that most voters, polling shows, think that early voting shouldn't extend more than about 2 weeks
before
election day.
Listen, I don't know why we started this, right? And I don't want to go down this rabbit hole now. I'm in the military. I've used and utilized absentee ballots because I've been away. I've been away on business before, and I've cast an absentee. I think absentee ballots serve a purpose. In Virginia, we used to have to certify why we couldn't vote on election day. But this idea of starting to vote in September, when there hasn't been a single debate, when ads haven't really heated up and we haven't engaged in the process, I do think that that's a disservice to the candidates in the process.
Yeah. No, you and I are total agreement about that. But yeah, I think given the political realities we face today, I think if you can vote early, go do it, get it taken care of so there aren't any last minute tie-ups that prevent you from voting. Because boy, given this election, Sean, you know, every vote is actually really going to count.
Huge. And we just don't know which state it's going to come down to. You mentioned people coming in this country illegally. Let me have you walk through this scenario. I come into this country illegally. I go to New York City. I get a license because New York and all those liberals deem it possible up there, as well as a bunch of other states. Who knows? Maybe I go to California. What prevents me now from actually registering to vote?
Well, the other side will tell you, well, it's a felony if you register to vote, but there's nothing really that prevents you from registering if you're an alien, because places like New York, California, elsewhere, they do absolutely nothing to check to make sure you're really a U.S. citizen. And remember, there's an advantage to you registering to vote, because what happens? You get a voter registration card. That card can then be used to obtain other forms of ID. And that's why aliens, I think, actually have an incentive to register to vote, because they can get that. And look, if they vote, their chances of getting caught are very, very slim. And even if they get caught, will the U.S. Justice Department prosecute them, the current one? No.
But it's okay. Let me take it one step further. Let's just hypothetically say in the election that we're talking about right now, 1,000 people vote and 5 people vote illegally, right? And you win the election over me by 3 votes. Well, how do we know who they voted for?
Well, the way contests work in elections, it doesn't matter who they voted for. If the number of illegal votes was larger than the margin of victory, that's a bad election, and it needs to be overturned.
Right, but my point is, but you see the inherent flaw now. Now we have to pay for a new election. I have to get my team back out on the field. I mean, But like, this is, so again, let's get back to the media complaint. Well, there's no evidence that this happens. How can we document the people who are not legal are actually registering to vote?
Well, there's actually been a number of reports done about this that have looked at actual data. I'll just tell you about one. A couple of years ago, the Public Interest Legal Foundation sent a letter to every county registrar in Virginia and said, we want the files on every voter who on their own wrote to you and said, oh, guess what? I shouldn't be registered because I'm not a U.S. citizen. They found over 5,500 aliens had done that in Virginia, and they had cast, before they were taken off the rolls, 7,500 votes. That may not sound like a lot in a big state like Virginia, but remember, we've had 2 state attorney general's races in the last 20 years decided by less than 1,000 votes.
But see, then that this is why what frustrates me, and I'm sure it kills you, is this ongoing narrative from the left in the media that it doesn't exist and that it doesn't, it's not consequential, because clearly it is.
It is. Now, yeah. Look, they the reason they say that is because they use it as a reason to oppose all of the common sense election reforms that actually voters support. Things like requiring an ID to vote, requiring proof of citizenship when you register. That's their way of opposing those kind of reforms.
All right, I want to get to voter ID in just a second. But before I do, let's wrap this up for a second. If I live in a state where, well, first of all, let me just ask you this. Let's say I go to California. I'm illegal. I come into this country through one of the holes that the government has allowed to exist down at the southern border. I get my ID in California and I move to Virginia. Can I just, I could get a Virginia driver's license, right? And then cast a vote in Virginia, theoretically?
Well, theoretically, yes, particularly because in California, they issue driver's licenses to illegal aliens. And remember, they've also put in automatic voter registration. They don't ask you whether you want to register to vote when you get your driver's license. In California, they now automatically register
you. So, whoa, time out. I thought this was a theoretical exercise. But so you're telling me in the state of California, you come into this country illegally, you walk up and you say, I would like a driver's license. They hand one to you and they say, as a bonus, here's a voter ID card.
No, they just automatically put you. Yeah, they automatically put you on the voter registration list, and it's up to you to down the road say, oh, by the way, I'm not a citizen. I shouldn't be registered.
Okay, so let me I didn't take a lot of courses in college to graduate. I found the loopholes. If I come into this country illegally, i.e., let's just start with this. I break the law to come into the country. Then I get a license and I'm in California where they hand me the ability to be able to vote. Then suddenly I'm going to find Jesus and say, you know what? I broke the law to come into the country, but that's where I'm going to stop breaking your laws. I'm not going to vote. I'm not going to continue to break your laws.
Well, yeah, that's what the left says. It won't happen, but we both know it does.
Okay. This is the last question before I move on to voter ID. What can we do to stop it or to call attention to this?
States need to start requiring proof of citizenship when you register to vote. That can be done just as easily as showing an ID to vote. But in order to get that done, states have to pass laws, and there has to be a change in federal law because of a bad Supreme Court decision that misinterpreted the National Voter Registration Act that causes problems for states that want to require proof of citizenship.
Shouldn't those states, I mean, I would argue that if you are, let's just take leftists at their word. They're trying to, I mean, I've heard the arguments why we need to give them driver's licenses and whatever. I don't buy them. But if you did, if you were theoretically sympathetic to their ridiculous argument, wouldn't a good case say, okay, just, you know, when I remember when I turned 16, I got my license, it was very clear that it was under 21. So you couldn't use it to get into a bar or buy alcohol. Shouldn't we at least tell the states, if you're going to play this ridiculous game, I mean, I get it. We're calling their bluff is what we're really doing. It's saying, then fine, have a license that says not eligible to use for votes or something. I mean, to vote or something.
Oh, no, that's a very good idea. It's something I've been recommending for years, is that all driver's licenses issued by every state should show on its face whether you are a U.S. citizen or not.
Well, isn't that what the Real ID is all about?
Well, it's supposed to be, but it needs to be on the face of the ID that you are a U.S. citizen or not, because of the fact that driver's licenses are basically our national ID, and we use them for so many things like voting or, for example, applying for welfare benefits.
Right. All right. So then that's a nice segue into voting ID. The left tells you all the time it's racist. It disproportionately affects people of color and at the low income. What's the Hans Heritage answer to that?
None of those claims are true. And that's easily disproven because we've now got a decade and a half of actual turnout data to show it. Remember, Indiana, Georgia, they put their photo ID laws in place for the first time in the 2008 presidential election. So we've got turnout in election after election after election, not only in those states, but other states. And the data clearly shows it does not prevent anyone from voting. It doesn't matter what their race. And Sean, polling shows that voters overwhelmingly support requiring an ID. And again, it doesn't matter your race, your ethnicity, or which political party you're in, a majority of all voters say, an ID to vote? Yeah, of course, I got to show an ID every day for all kinds of things.
But it's not just that. To me, again, let's just take the left argument. They say, oh, these people can't afford it, they can't do it. Aside from all of the measures that several states have taken to ensure that, you mentioned welfare benefits. If you're truly poor and need government assistance, you're probably on Medicare, Medicaid, get welfare, SNAP right. benefits, whatever, all of which require an ID. So you're telling me that a person who is at the low end of the income scale, who's getting all these other benefits that they need an ID for the one thing that we want to say an ID you need for, which is voting, suddenly that's the inconvenience. But when they get all the other financial type benefits and resources from the government where they also need an ID, that's not racist?
Well, see, that you're pointing out the absurdity of the arguments they're making. And in fact, every single state that has put in a photo ID requirement for voting has, as part of the law, put in a provision saying, if you can't afford an ID, the state will provide you one for free. You know what it exhibits? Let me tell you. It is a patronizingly racist attitude to claim that Black Americans, for example, can't obtain an ID just like other folks. It's a racist attitude.
I know. It's literally a trope. You know, yeah. They always talk about these things on CNN and whatever about all these Republicans, conservatives that use racist, this word from 1842 means this. And yet they parrot this idea that if you're Black, well, God, you couldn't possibly get an ID. Right. And I think on its face that it is unbelievable. If this argument was being made the other way, if not having an ID benefited Republicans, they would be saying that is so demeaning to people of color and low income people. But because it benefits right. them, do you look, I believe fundamentally, because the absurdity of all of these arguments, how many people are coming in the country illegally, how we give them voter licenses, and then how we don't require voter ID in so many areas, that on their face, the absurdity of those arguments is so great that you could only possibly make them if you truly were trying to subvert the system.
Well, no, I think you're right about that. And particularly because the leadership of the left, their constituents don't agree with them
right.
on these kinds of issues. So why are they pushing them? Well, one, I think they think it helps them manipulate election outcomes. And second, they use it to raise money by trying to scare voters.
Yeah. So two more quick things and then we got to go. I believe we mentioned at the beginning, and I meant to mention this, on early voting, I think the biggest scam ever perpetrated was that absentee ballot voting exists in every single state and territory. You request an absentee ballot, you follow the process, they send it right. to you. This notion of needing early voting beyond what exists was a complete farce perpetrated by the left.
Yeah, I agree with you. We don't need early voting going out for 2 months before an election or even a month before an election. And absentee ballots should be reserved only for individuals who really can't make it to any polling location to vote because they're sick or out of town. But even that excuse is a lot tougher to meet these days when you have extended periods of early voting.
Yeah. All right. The last question I'm going to ask you kind of ties into the first question I asked you. I asked you if we were better off than we were 4 years ago. Is the RNC and other outside entities doing enough now to proactively undo what the left has done and to get us back on the right track?
Yeah, they're putting in a real effort on this. And the best quick example I can give you is, look, they just won a lawsuit, Federal Court of Appeals, over Pennsylvania. The left had sued saying, oh, a state law that says absentee ballots have to both sign a ballot and put the date on it. Even if the voter doesn't put the date on the ballot, you should have to count the ballot. And the federal court said, no, that's the state law. It has to be complied with.
Good. All right. Where can people go to get information and stay up to date as far as all the work that you and Heritage are doing?
Go to heritage.org. And if you want to know how good or bad your state is, check out our election integrity scorecard that analyzes every single state in the union.
Okay. Hans, thanks for being with us. As I said, you are the preeminent expert on voting in this country. I always appreciate your insight. Thanks for being with us. Guys, continue to subscribe. This is the kind of conversations that we're going to have as we lead up to election night. Every single night, we're giving you more power, more insight into the elections. That's why it's critical that you subscribe to YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, Apple. All those things are watched every night on the first, channel 347 at 7 o'clock. Make sure you hit that DVR button to make sure that you never miss an episode. We'll see you back here tomorrow on the Sean Spicer Show. Thanks for being with us.